From Post Media, I'm Ewan Plater, and this is XY, a show about mental health in men. On today's episode, I'll be sitting down with Jack Norman of social initiative Milk for Tea. Along with his co-founder Daniel, Milk for Tea works with individuals and corporations to better understand what masculinity means in the modern age. We had a super interesting conversation this week, and I certainly hope you enjoy it as much as I do. As always, today's conversation is not meant to be taken as advice. It is just a conversation between two men. If you are looking for some support, I've left the details of some great organisations in the show notes, including those of Time to Change, and I'd like to draw attention to their Ask Twice campaign. Sometimes we say we're fine when we're not. To really understand how our loved ones are doing, the campaign encourages us to ask twice. A simple, are you sure you're okay, can make all the difference. Anyway, that's enough out of me. Let's get on with the show. So Jack, thanks so much for joining us in the studio today.
Thank you for having me.
Feeling good? To be
here. Yeah, good. Good. Birthday week, so...
Birthday
yeah.
week?
Yeah.
Which, are you happy to tell us which big birthday it is?
Yeah, I'm not that old yet. 28. 28. Oh. Yeah, I feel like it's one of those where you're kind of getting to that age where you need to have everything sorted out and, you know, I'm still not there, but I'm navigating through things fairly well, I would say. I'm a lot happier than I was this time last year, so.
There you go then.
Yeah, exactly.
To be honest, I think that's a massive, you've kind of jumped straight into it, haven't you, with that, with like,
sorry.
That's such a, no, it's a good point to be honest, because that's like such a thing of like, I definitely have this. Like imposter syndrome's a thing, but I've got like life imposter syndrome where I look at other people that are 28, 29 and I'm like, fuck, they've got it all going on.
Yeah.
Like I should be an adult by now.
Well, yeah, I suppose there's societal pressures that you're put under. I mean, my parents got married when, you know, my dad was 24, I think. My grandparents got married when they were 18. So you, and you look at that, I haven't even got a girlfriend. So, and I'm 28. So, so we're doing well. No. But then you look at kind of the way that they navigate through life. I always speak to my grandparents about this and try and have these pressing conversations, but sometimes they're not that up for it. It's because like their mode of life and their happiness in life was like that survival mode. So they were happy, like they were happy if they had food on the table, a roof over their head, and you know, they spent time with each other. Now, because of the world that we live in and all these things that happen on Instagram and going on these fabulous holidays like LA, that isn't enough anymore. So it's more about actually, okay, so what more can I have out of my life? What car can I buy?
What extras can extra I stick can on I, there?
But then they're not extras anymore. That's the thing. So having your like bread and butter kind of, you know, things, they're not really, we don't even think about those anymore. You don't actually, when was the last time you thought about having a roof over your head and you're really lucky to have
I don't
a
even
roof?
Think about my Netflix subscription.
Exactly.
Like, or my iPhone. Like,
well,
just
I use my
staples.
Dad's as well. So, that's, so I don't even think about it.
You know Netflix are sponsoring the show, right? No, I'm kidding.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, can you imagine? Users, how many users can you get? But yeah, no, I guess... for me, it's just, I'm at a really interesting point in my life because I'm growing a lot and I'm really finding out what the things that I want to prioritize and the things that fulfill me.
Yeah.
Probably even since the last time we spoke, there's been a lot of growth and a lot of change there and a lot of clarity, which I think I'm a lot more mature now.
Yeah.
And also I think like, I've been reading quite a lot of books and it's actually like, if you don't find your inner happiness, then you can't replicate that to someone else. Like we attribute a lot of our happiness to external factors, whereas actually you can find it all within. Like you look at these people and you're like, you look really happy. What's the magic formula? And for me, like it's finding these things that are meditative, that fulfill me, that, you know, make me really happy. Like I'm reading this book at the moment that someone gave me and it's really insightful because it says one of the tricks to use, and it's actually a creative book. It's not even about like mental health or anything, but it says about like rating your day like out of 10 and then attributing like factors within your day to make like what made you happy and what doesn't make you happy. So I love being in the kitchen. I was speaking to my mate about this last night. I love being in the kitchen, but I'd never want to make money from it because I love being in the kitchen and I don't want to lose that passion. I hate sitting behind my desk at work, but I have to. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it's how you navigate through those, but it's also like I know that I need to sit at my desk at work. And so I'm still going to have to accept that. But yeah. Do I put aside an hour an evening to cook?
Yeah.
There you go.
Because that's something that you really enjoy doing.
Yeah.
That was some intro to the show. Normally we just chat about how your week was and how your weekend's been, but that got deep real quick.
Yeah. I mean, someone called me niche the other day, and so I'm trying to live up to that. I was saying to someone at work just as a joke, oh, set me up with one of your mates. No, you're too niche.
Too niche.
What does that mean?
I'm like an acquired taste.
Well, do you know what?
I'm too gourmand.
No, I'm just a person. How about that?
Yeah. I mean, you let them decide.
Yeah, my boss called me serious as well. I don't think I'm serious at all, but...
I think you've got a serious presence to you until really? You start chatting, and then you're like really smiley. But like, I think to like watch you approach, you look like a serious dude.
Really?
You've got a John Wick vibe about you.
Really? I mean, he's an assassin. So.
But a nice guy. Like, he's got a dog and stuff as well. He's like a nice guy assassin. Anyway.
Yeah.
Right, let me just pull this one back a little bit. Let's run back the track.
Yeah.
So obviously, you and Daniel founded an initiative called Milk for Tea, and I really want to get into what Milk for Tea is, what it does, your passions. But just before we do that, one of the most rewarding experiences that I had in the run-up to creating this show was actually an event where you and Daniel were talking, and you spoke about your childhood and your upbringing, and kind of some big life moments that led you to enter into the industry which you've entered into. So I thought a great place for us to start would be if you could just tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up working in the mental health, and specifically the male mental health sector.
Yeah, good question. So grew up literally obsessed with football. That's all I ever thought about. So as you do as a young boy in the UK, I aspired to be a professional footballer. So I put a lot of work into that, got a couple of good breaks, achieved quite a lot of success, you know, was kind of on that journey. Then one day it was just taken away from me. You know, like these things happen. It's a sport that, you know, you do get injured. And but I also think I was at a point in my life as well, and I don't really ever share this, but I was at a point in my life where I was actually... kind of saying to myself, do I want this? Like, do I really want this? And if I really, like, I mean, I was 16, so I obviously didn't do any deep inner work. I was just like, what's next? But if I actually looked at it and looked into it, yeah, like that wasn't really what I wanted.
You just felt like you ended up on this track.
I felt like I loved football. I loved playing football. I still love playing football because when you're out on that field, you don't think about anything else. Like, so whatever crap's going on in your life, when I go and play football, I'm there. I'm in the moment. Like, it helped me really live in the present.
I have a similar relationship with running, actually, where like, no matter what's going on, if I just like hit the pavement for half an hour, it just clears the mind.
Yeah, it's great. Like, if you've got to find those meditative things, like cooking does that for me. I'm actually starting, Dan's like pushing me to run. I hate running. Like, even when I was playing football and I was like the MVP, I wouldn't run. I'd be like, give me the ball. Right, I'll put it over there.
basically.
So it was really interesting navigating through that because I think there was a lot of external pressures that made me want to be a footballer. I actually spoke to my dad about it because he was like, you were so much more talented than me.
Yeah.
Like, you had the potential to make it, et cetera, et cetera. So I said to him, are you disappointed that I didn't make it? And he was like, look, like, I know that 1% of all kids that aspire to be a professional footballer, maybe even less, make it. So I'm a bit more of a realist, but obviously I wanted to, I knew that you had a talent and I wanted to help you or open the doors to achieve that. He drove me to every single match, didn't miss a match, like really supportive. Like, I bought far too many football boots on his credit card, but that was fine. Like, you know, because you do it for your kids and you do it for the people you love. But I think he also saw real talent in me. But I was actually having a dinner with a girl that I was dating a while back, and she was like, she'd been dating football and stuff. She's actually been on Love Island now. So yeah, kind of like in that crowd. And she said to me, I bet you really wish that you became a footballer. And I said, well, no. I was like studying at law school at the time. I was like, no, not really. Why would you say that? Just cooked her a lovely meal as well.
Yeah.
You know? And she's like, you know, because like loads of money, like all this fame and all this stuff. And I was like, to be honest with you, like, I'm really happy where I am now. Like, I was aspiring to be a lawyer. Yeah. So, you know, I was really just happy where
I was. And
that
was the move after football with law school?
Yeah, so after football, we kind of had a sit-down meeting with my dad, as you do.
With the manager.
with the boss. And we were like, okay, so what are we going to do? So I took a fast track, because I wasn't really like applying myself at college, because I thought I was going to be a professional footballer. Never studied for any exams or anything. So we were kind of like, okay, so what are we going to do? backup plans. So took an Accelerate business course, managed to get into uni to study law. Then that was kind of like the tunnel vision. Let's go be a lawyer.
We're doing that now.
We're not a footballer. We're a lawyer. So quite big dreams.
You're not pissing about, are you? Like, I'm going to be Premiership League. Right. Okay. Was it injury? Injured out of that game. What else is like super high powered in the business? Lawyer. I'm a lawyer now.
Why not? Yeah. Badass.
And you went and got it. Right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like that was, I mean, that was kind of the goal to get there. Went to uni, went to law school. Really eye-opening experience, really tough actually. Law school was probably, I would say to date, one of the toughest years of my life. Like I'd just moved to London, had no money because I'd just been a student, and was trying to find myself in the big smoke, was working part-time in a retail job, earning like 400 quid a month. My dad was paying my rent and I was trying to have a social life. I was doing 8 to 8 every day at law school. Man. Like there was a lot of stuff going on. So, and it, well, there was two factors there. First of all, I loved studying the law. I didn't like the practical side of it because it was like following a rule book basically. And the second, I was just so overworked, so tired. Like I remember I had probably 12 exams in 7 days.
It's not on.
No, in like January. Yeah. So we booked like a 2-week trip away to Thailand. And in that trip, I was kind of like, because I only had 3 modules to complete in the second term.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, I'm over this now. I'll do it and I'll get the, you know, get the masters or, you know, the...
I'll get the letters.
Get the letters, basically. Go get, have a graduation, but then I'm done. So I was working in retail at the time and just kind of fell into that. Really was loving like the suiting. Used to wear 3-piece to law school.
Love
that. But like with trainers.
Yeah.
And like
ahead of your time.
Yeah, mate. Yeah. Like, but you know, there was a lot of things that if you look like, when we get to the end of the story, like I'll say it, but if you look at like the journey, like I've picked up something from everything that I've gone through, which I don't ever probably reflect enough back on. But yeah, so fell into this retail job, did obviously applied myself and did really well there. Obviously wasn't turning up hungover every time, which I was when I was doing part-time. And then kind of progressed through that and have been in and out of retail for the last five, six years. Yeah. I think my approach has really changed. I'm probably at a fairly senior level now and could have a pretty decent career in retail. But it's one of those industries that I'd love to just flip on its head. I'm trying to do that in the role that I'm in at the moment, but just trying to, you know, like it's a really challenging climate at the moment. But people still don't care about people. They care about top line and bottom line. And for me, like that's where, and that's like one of the values that I'm trying to build within Milk for Tea. Like there'll be companies, organizations that come to us and say, can you do this? But we're on a really tight budget. If it doesn't fit within our costing parameters, I'm not going to turn you away because it doesn't fit within our costings. As long as we're not at a loss for it within our travel or whatever, I'm more than happy to stand and speak in front of 500 people, 20 people, 5 people to get across a message or have them get them thinking in a different way because that's the benefit of the individual, not of me or not of my company. So yeah, we're trying to do a bit within my current role, but obviously it's a huge organization. Like I'm trying to influence 4,500 people.
And you can't change things like easily when there's that much.
Well, there needs to be a culture change, doesn't there? So
kind of from the top down.
Yeah.
I guess like something super interesting for me then is because you've gone on 2 big career journeys and now you're like at this point in the story, you're in London, you're like busting your ass, working massive days, not really seeing the benefit of it as of yet. And when did Milk for Tea become like an idea? What was in? Why don't you tell us what Milk for Tea was, and then tell us what that inception moment was? Because that's quite a big like focus shift in terms of the two things before were very like power driven careers, and then you kind of pivot into this amazing social enterprise. So where did that come from?
Yeah, so I mean, I think they like the story kind of goes hand in hand to what Milk for Tea is and how it came across. So having fell into retail, I was asked to model at a fashion show because like that London Fashion Week scene or men's Fashion Week scene was something that I really was involved in and I loved, and I thought that was really important. It's funny how things change now, but I met Dan at a fashion show. Like I met Dan at the fashion show that I was modeling in.
Co-founder of Milk for Tea, who sadly isn't with us today.
Yeah, we can have him here pretending in person.
Yeah, you can just do an impression.
I did one of the an event a couple of weeks ago, and he was meant to be there, but he couldn't be there. And I was just like, just pretend he's here, guys.
Yeah.
And we used like a mannequin because it was in a store. Just like pretend that's him.
This guy.
But yeah, so met him and we just had a really powerful conversation first off the bat. Like, wasn't expecting it, didn't even know where it came from. He told me about the struggles that he had. He really like broke down a lot of emotional walls in the first interaction. I'd obviously gone through this kind of thing with, I didn't know what I wanted to be, or I always kind of looked at other people and wanted to replicate what they were rather than being myself as well. My dad went through a tough time. So I kind of like saw this whole thing and was like, men need something.
Yeah.
Like then it's obviously backed up by statistics from the male suicide rate, sex trafficking, child abuse, domestic abuse, like you LGBTQ plus, you know, physical and verbal abuse. Like there's a lot of statistics that, and men are the main perpetrators in that. So we wanted to open up some sort of channel, vehicle for men, to help men feel more connected, to create a community, for men to feel more empowered, to open up and be vulnerable. But we didn't know what we wanted to do. So we were like sat there talking and we were like, we want to do something, but we didn't know what. So started off as a blog, just shared our experiences, wrote about like different things. Then it kind of progressed in, because we're obviously in the fashion scene, into like fashion and mental health. So it was like Milk for Tea, fashion and mental health. So that was kind of like the brand image for a while. Still, we weren't doing enough.
Just sneezing there.
Yeah, love it. So last year we decided that we wanted to fully incorporate as an organization. And really make a go of it. We've both been on a coaching course, a really intense coaching course, and it completely changed our lives and the way that we view things. So we're like, why not spread this word through workshops, coaching, and some consultancy work? And we spent a lot of time trying to build that.
And when you say you want a coaching course, is that for you guys to become life coaches yourselves?
Yeah. But it's a really transformative experience, because there's like four prongs to it. So you're obviously learning. So you're learning a strategy on how to navigate through a coaching conversation. You're then practicing that. On the flip side of that, you're being coached.
Yeah.
And then you're observing. So there's like four. So when you come up, it's like a 3-day intense course, and then you go away for 6 weeks and you practice, and then you come back for an assessment. And it's just really interesting, because you've got 3 days and like you hear a lot about people. Like you have conversations that you didn't realize that person was even going to be capable of because they're being coached, and that it's opening up. So we never offer advice. We just ask a series of powerful questions, and it really unlocks a lot of change, like, and a lot of amazing conversation. And I think where we're at is that we understand that a lot of men are hurting. A lot of people are hurting, but a lot of men are hurting, and then the people that are hurting Usually it's because of the way a man's acted or the way that a man feels about himself. So we wanted to just allow that work to happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's many great initiatives, including this podcast, that talk a lot about what's going on and, you know, progressing that conversation. We really found that felt that our calling was going in and actually doing the work and being really intentional about standing alongside men to really help them first heal, but then build them up and grow. Mm-hmm. And now we're in a space where it's not just suicide that we focus on. So if you want to achieve a goal or you just want to be better, like I always want to be better. Yeah. Externally, people might be like, you know, he's smashing it or whatever, but there's always room for me to be better. So I'm on this development and growth journey. So I need milk for tea for that.
Can I ask you a question? Because something that I find super fascinating about, I mean, maybe it's not a specifically male thing, but this idea of like hyper performance and you hear about guys in the stock market or CEOs or probably actually it's way more common, but we'll have these business coaches who are there to like actually push them to be better at work and more confident in their jobs and all that kind of stuff. And that's great. But there's an element of that to me, which flies in the face of personal development. Because it's just like, no, like be better at your job, work harder, achieve more. How do you make sure that's not at the expense of personal development and self-care? You know, like how do you balance up business achievement with being content and happy as a human being and not allowing one to overwrite the other?
Yeah. I mean, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves for work.
Yeah.
You know, you've just been through this whole process of like leaving your job.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a wife, you've got a home, you've got a dog that you need to feed. Like, so there is pressures. Like I went through that same journey last year when I was working on Milk for Tea for 6 months. So I think we look at, actually in this book that I'm reading as well, I think there's different types of jobs or work that you can have. What you find is if someone's getting a business coach in, then they're not fulfilled by their job. Like that's what I observe. Because they're getting someone to get them to that peak performance.
Yeah.
When I'm doing a workshop or doing coaching, even if I've had the crappiest day or I'm full of cold or, but I'm still turning up. I'm still there because it's what I love to do. And Dan and I have always said that this is a life that we're building, not a job.
Yeah.
Like it's not work. It's milk for tea.
It's how you want to live.
It's how I want to live. Like I would love to be out in the field every single day or, you know, a couple of times a week interacting. You know, that's why we love Jordan so much, because it was like we were living milk for tea. Like that was, and we created that experience ourselves. I think to your question, like it's really difficult because having that work-life balance or finding that work-life balance is really, really challenging. And we always want to do more. There's always we look at another paycheck or, you know, a bigger salary or a bigger car allowance. Like there's always something else that we aspire to, but that's always external rather than internal. So like at the moment in my job, like I'm kind of, you know, doing the job well. But it's now like I'm searching for things where it's like, okay, so how can I grow from this place?
Yeah.
Like what skills can I get? Like, it's a huge corporate environment. I'm going to need to influence big CEOs and bosses in other organizations. So how can I get in front of those people and like learn those?
What can I take away from this experience rather than what can I just put into this business?
Exactly. So if you look at a lot of people in jobs, it's more that there's an imbalance because they're inputting more than they're getting out.
Okay.
That's what I think. Yeah. Like,
and that's why people feel disenfranchised at work and stuff.
So how do you get people to connect with their business?
Okay.
Because that's when you switch things on. So your retention will be better, your KPIs will be better, you'll have much better customer engagement. But it's how do you unlock that? How do you get people to like connect with your business? And for me, like basically it's what we do at Milk for Tea. It's like getting them to connect with themselves to start off with, but then also giving them rewards that aren't financial or uniform. It's creating a community feel, so they feel like they're part of something, like they're coming to see their family, not their colleagues.
Yeah,
they're coming to learn rather than to work. Do you see what I mean?
I completely see the difference, yeah. I think as well, like, because you're obviously dialed into that because you've got this day job where you work in quite a corporate environment, and then you and Dan also have this, it's more than a side hustle, but you've got this, like, initiative that's on the go as well. And the two are kind of running side by side. Mm. And as you say, they definitely help each other. But when you take Milk for Tea into a completely separate corporate environment, say some big bank wants to work with you guys on whatever, on an initiative for its employees in terms of engagement at work or just having more conversations about mental health, what are those responses like when you guys kind of rock up on day one? You know, what's are you guys typically well received as kind of change makers, or yeah, what's the experience?
I think it's really interesting because we haven't actually done any marketing. So first of all, for them to get us through the door or to have an initial meeting is perfect, because we haven't done any marketing. Some of that is due to financial restraints. Some of that is due to, like, I think when you're in this line of work, some of it needs to come organically. Then some of it is the resource. So we don't have enough people, or like, it's just two of us. We subcontract some stuff out. We have some freelancers. We have some people doing us favors. So for us to even get through the door is an amazing achievement, yeah. I think.
Very word of mouth.
Very word of mouth. And, you know, we have an extensive website, and I think people are kind of looking at us now, like, yeah. Okay, they're the people to go to. Like, some I do actually ask now, oh, so where do you find out about us? Because
it's always good to know where your customers are coming from.
Exactly. So, I mean, it depends on what environment it's in. We've actually been working a lot more with educational centres, like universities and schools recently. And obviously that's great. Like, going through that whole university experience, I wish I'd had something or an external company that would come in. I think it's in corporates is interesting. But I also think that that's because of the corporate minded approach. So again, we've done workshops in the organization that I'm working in, and they just want to do one. And it's like, well, that's not going to do anything. Like, it's great.
Just like one-hour chat. And then it's like, great, we've fixed our stuff.
Exactly. Cause you're ticking a box. Yeah. So for us now, it's about having, or being a lot more firm with what we suggest, because someone could come to us and go, oh, we want you to deliver a workshop on masculinity. So my first question would be like, so you're reaching out to us, what's your goal with this? Like, what do you want to achieve? And they'll say, okay, well, we want to show the men in our organization that we're doing something for them. We want to get them better connected. We want to get them to open up a little bit more. So you think that's going to happen in one workshop?
Yeah.
But then, you know, you can't, like, now we are saying to organizations, if you want to work with us, we would recommend that you have at least four.
Yeah. So you've got enough time to actually get conversations going. People can go away, let it stew. Because I guess for a lot of people that in these organizations that you guys go into, you raise the topic of toxic masculinity, or you raise the topic of male suicide, it's either the first time that a lot of these guys have spoken about it, or even like had it discussed, you know? Because I think that for me, one of my first experience, that talk that I met you at, was the first time I'd kind of heard you guys speak. And you opened it up to a Q&A, and we were in like a really trendy part of town, you know? Mm. Like a room full of who I presumed are like designers.
Creatives,
you know, photographers, like lots of skinny jeans going on, lots of like acne tees, you know?
And New Balance.
Yeah, exactly. Sunglasses on indoors, that kind of vibe. Yeah. Pretty wanky.
Yeah.
But you guys raised these topics about masculinity, and I think the famous Gillette advert came up around teaching our children better, kind of the best a man can get kind of vibe. And there was such a negative reaction to it. And I remember people being like really visceral, dudes in the room being really visceral at you and Daniel about how, like, well, why do I have to apologize if like another man behaves badly? And everyone just took it so personally. And I was like really shocked that there was such like umbrage in the room against the idea of men talking about their emotions more.
Yeah.
And I walked away from that experience being like, fuck, guys really have a problem. Like, guys do not like to talk about this stuff. And from what I just saw, it feels quite accusatory. Like, guys feel like they're being attacked whenever that conversation comes up. And I just wondered if that's an experience that is mirrored in the professional environments that you guys go into.
That was probably one of the only ever times that that's happened.
How fascinating.
Well, because of the crowd that was there.
Which really, you would ironically presume to be the...
A little bit more progressive. But I think for, like you said, sometimes it's like they know what they're signing up to, but sometimes it's a bit of a shock. So you kind of need that follow up and then another follow up to kind of really ingrain it and embed it.
And not everyone wants to talk, you know, like
some people want to listen.
People learn differently. Some people show up to these workshops and seminars and they're genuinely engaged and they're getting lots out of it, but they're just not going to be the person that puts their hand up and says, oh yeah, like here's my life story. Yeah. I'm that guy, you know, I love to talk. I love the sound of my own voice. Launched a bloody podcast.
Yeah, exactly. There we go.
But not everyone is. Yeah. You know, like some people just like to soak it in. And I guess you're right that if companies are engaging in these workshops because they want to tick a box and say, we have invested in mental health, that's not actual change.
No.
You know, that's not, it's not fixing anything. And you're not instilling a culture change in the organization.
Mm. There's not a lot of people or companies that are brave enough though. Like, because we put a lot of focus on corporates this year. And we've done a fair amount of work, like really credible work, you know, generated some revenue from it, fine. But we're here to make a change. Like, we're not doing it for us. We're not doing it to get an OBE or to, you know, to be these guys. I mean, we would love to be on the front of cover of GQ, but, you know, not it's not for that reason. We're doing it because we believe what we've built. And we believe that we can make a change and we believe that we can reduce the suicide figures. We believe that we can reduce the domestic abuse figures. We believe that we can, you know, stop or partially stop a lot of things. Yeah.
I guess like that's more topical this week than any other week.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to suicide, with it being suicide prevention.
And I think it's great that we have initiatives like that, but then it gives, and this is not negative at all, because any exposure to the statistics, or like I even read today that 800,000 people commit suicide a year. Like, that's mental.
So the figures have gone up for the first time in a while, and you know, like, it just surprises me in a lot of ways, because I feel like as much as men don't talk that much, they're definitely talking more than they used to.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like, where is that coming from? Like, how is it that guys are, I feel, moving forward in so many ways, but the stats aren't mirroring that? And that's not an answer I'm looking for, but as a discussion, it's like a really tough one for me to balance up in my head. Like, why are guys...
They did say that there'll be a slight spike this year because they've got a lot more accurate data. So that's one of the reasons.
Okay.
I think the second reason is actually... Because, well, once you get more exposure to it, gets you thinking more. So people, if you're more aware of it, then some people might act. I think that's another reason why we want to do the work, is to prevent that.
Yeah.
Because it is getting a lot more topical. It's trendy to talk about mental health now. That actually, like, there is a huge calling for the work that we do to then kind of progress that.
It's an interesting perspective, actually, because you're right, there's like a responsibility on anybody who's going to bring up mental health as a topic and place that center stage, whether it's at a state level by the government or an organization or between friends. There's then a bit of a responsibility to support the framework of that.
Because
I've actually had that, that's a really good point. I've never considered it that way, that conversation is a good thing inherently, but it needs to be considered and well framed, and there needs to be aftercare, and you need to think about why we're having these. That's a really good point. And you know, I've been in workplaces before that have decided to take mental health more seriously, and I've seen emails go out that are like, if you're ever having a bad day, talk to someone about it. And I was kind of like, well, yeah, like, I'm always happy for a colleague to speak to me, and I think that's a great culture to have in terms of mental health and speaking to your colleagues, and you know, like, no stigma around mental health. But equally, not everything. Like, if a colleague comes to me and says, I'm having really suicidal thoughts, I'm not trained to know what to do with that. Like, is the best thing for them for me to report it? Is it to speak to the police? Is it to phone a hospital? Like, what?
Yeah.
So you're completely correct. Actually, the frameworks that we place around these conversations are as important as encouraging the conversations themselves.
Yeah, of course. Well, there's got to be that follow-up. That's why I get frustrated in the corporate world, because they use these huge initiatives like a helpline.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a helpline. And then, like, you've got to give people a variety of options. So in the organization that I'm working in now, or in any time that we do consultancy work, I say that you need a qualified coach on site. Simple as that. You need to offer at least a weekly meeting, workshop, whatever session for people to go to. Like, it needs to be consistent. So you know if you're having a really bad week, but your next session where you can share is next Wednesday, or you can get to a coach or a counselor by Monday, mm-hmm. then you know that you've only got 3 days to get there. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So again, in really individualist, approach, you need to give a multitude of options. That's why we're trying to do loads of different things, from curating events, because that's where people may only feel like they can go, or it's trendy to go to events, our own workshops, corporate workshops, one-to-one coaching, yeah. like loads of different spaces, trying to do something with food, trying to do a book club,
yeah.
you know, trying to do a run club, like, because...
Different cultural moments.
Yeah, you capture a different audience. You're not going to have the same people at a workshop that you are going to have at a run club, but the messaging is the same. So yes. you're reaching more people.
Yeah.
Because people gravitate towards different things. So I think for me, like, I'm so, so passionate about facilitating and doing the work, because I know what the benefit that it can have.
Yeah.
It's just getting out there, getting organizations to be a lot more responsible and a lot more considered in their approach. So that's like the battle that we're facing, because now we've built something that we're really proud of and, you know, that people are gravitating towards. But it's like, how do you then change the agenda of other people
yeah.
or other organizations that are 50,000 times bigger than you?
Yeah. Where do you even begin with that? And I think as well, like, it's, you mentioned the, like, you've got an issue with like hotlines or call lines kind of thing, people can like dial for support, and definitely like those are so valuable if you need help. There's so many great resources, like yeah. Samaritans, that you can like phone up and speak to someone there and then, but that's very much like an after the fact kind of thing, like damage is dead by that point. Whereas I guess what's really interesting about what you're saying is like going into organizations but also creating so many societal touch points that can help prevent men getting to that point in the first place,
yeah.
so that the emotions they feel and the battles that they face and the society that they come to loggerheads with in terms of what male image is and stuff, they can actually feel more comfortable discussing that internally and yeah. in society, so that it doesn't become such a brimming over issue in the first place.
I would say that we're kind of in a transitional era, because it started, like, if you look at like my grandparents, my dad's super cool, so he's obviously very open to it, like he's into his crystals, sound healing, all this stuff, yeah. amazing. So he's open-minded, but even like in comparison to like my friend's parents, like, it's still very different. So yeah. I would say that we're kind of driving that train forward, and I'm really excited for like my children and my grandchildren, their peers and their friends, because I feel like we're in a state of transition where we're unlocking the gates for this to be okay and this to be in culture. Like, I'd love to do a lot more stuff grassroots. Like, I didn't have any support. I had a great upbringing, but I didn't have any support or any knowledge around all this stuff until I was 21,
yeah,
22, until someone, Dan, my business partner, said, I wanted to kill myself I tried to kill myself when I was 13. Then I was like, does that really happen?
Yeah, I didn't, yeah. I'm with you on that one. Like, those kind of conversations, it's not through like a bad childhood, like you had a great upbringing, but yeah, you're right. I didn't have any kind of, I had just such a blessed childhood, you know, like I didn't self-harm, no suicidal thoughts, not depressed as a kid. So when you said that, they're like, do kids actually hurt themselves? Like, I just didn't think about that. Like, yeah. It wasn't a thing I thought children did, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Your experience is your experience.
And it shapes your reality.
Exactly, exactly. So, and you never know what people are going through, because like, it could be fine on the outside, but then their home life could be bad. You know, everyone has their own story. Everyone has their own shit going on. So for me, it's, yeah, there's so many things that we want to do, like even like for kids, grassroots level, but then parents, you know, I'm just in conversations with a football club at the moment. Obviously being from a football background, like, it's something that I'm really passionate about, but
it's also it's an important frontier in terms of what male image is, yep. sport, and especially football, you know.
Yeah, a lot of these boys like me aspired to be a professional footballer, but then they don't get any support throughout that process. So, you know, you're 7 years old, you get signed to an academy, but then dropped at 16. There's no guidance for the family, because yeah. they're like, if you think about it, if you're working class background and your son has, or a daughter now has the chance of getting paid 50 grand a week, you're like,
sick.
Yeah, like, this is our life made. So there's no support from that dropout. There's no support through their careers,
yeah.
From what I've heard, and obviously being in that, maybe times have changed a little bit, but there's no support in their career. So when they go through trauma, I know that they do it when it's injury, there's like a bad injury, but, and then look off the back of it, look at like high profile players like Paul Gascoigne, Gary Speed, like they had a fair deal of mental health issues.
Yeah.
And there should be a responsibility from the organization or the industry that they were part of to help them through that. And if you don't get that, then you end up in a place like with where Gary Speed was.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a huge industry. Also going through that and having those experiences and just seeing like the pressure that they're under, you know.
From a young age, like as you say, it's like, yes, we've got these superstar footballers who there's been really visible cases over the years of like complete meltdowns and really bizarre behavior, like biting people, for example. Like happy people don't bite people.
No.
Like that's a very bizarre behavior. And yet come like game day, everyone's shouting his name. So how do you equate those kind of two things? But on the other side, as you say, if you're a 16-year-old kid and you get cut from the team, how are parents supposed to like pick up those pieces? Because kids are typically brought up to like do your best, like try your hardest, all that stuff. And then you're just sitting there with some football club saying, "Are they? You're not good enough." What are parents supposed to do with that?
Yeah, and then there's also an educational piece and a responsibility of the manager. And you know, like I always say to the team at work, like your a lot of your experience at work is solely dictated by your manager.
Yeah.
So, and that's just the way it is because they're your manager, aren't they? So they make all the decisions in your department or in your store. And it's the same with a football team. I had managers that I really loved and I thrived under. I had managers that I didn't really get on with or resonate. You know, if you shout at me, that's not the way to get through to me, but it might have been the way to get through my mate on my right. So, there's a huge educational piece in that whole sector and probably in every other sector. But again, resource, time, energy. It's a big task. And I hope that one day we'll be in a place where we're able to say that we're making a difference in there.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we'll start with this, doing this talk at a football club and then seeing how that progresses. But for me, like one huge learn is like not just saying I'm really happy with having done that. It's like going in. So like if I'm even on the phone to this football club today, I'm like, these are the things that we can do.
Yes.
And I want to put that on your radar straight away. Not after I've done it, or I'll come back to you in 3 months after I've delivered this workshop. I want to say to you that these are the opportunities that we have. I want you to go away and think about them and then let me know if you are interested in them because we can do them.
We can do them now.
We can do them now. Yeah. So we can look at your under six academy and do some fun stuff with them. We can look at creating a supporting parent group. We can, you know, like all that stuff, not rocket science, but really, really people focused. Not organizational focus.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you create those little things, like as an individual, as a parent, if you resonate with that and you go to that, you feel valued, you feel educated, you feel inspired, but you also feel like you're not alone.
Yes.
And like in that kind of industry, why not? And what does it take to set that up?
Not a lot.
Yeah. So that's where we're at.
Man, that's sick. Lots going on.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got one last question that I always ask everybody.
Yeah.
It's called Cliche Corner. Nice. So if you could... Nice.
If you wouldn't have expected anything different from you.
From me? Yeah. Than a cliche? What? If you could give your younger self any advice, what would it have been?
I know exactly what it'd be. I'm just trying to articulate it right in my head. That's why the silence.
That's cool. You can take your time.
Embrace the process.
Embrace the process.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, Jack, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Amazing, man. Thanks so much. Cheers, buddy. Bye. You've been listening to Jack Norman on XY with me, Ewan Plater. Thanks so much for joining us for this week's episode, and I look forward to welcoming you back next week. Bye for now.